Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Oh, hey, Sarah. How are you?
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there.
I didn't see you there. I just edited a couple of the ones where we do that. I think it's always really, really funny.
Look, friends.
We have a great, great guest today.
We have such a great guest today. We've got the great, it's funny, I always call him Billy, William Fichtner, who is truly just one of the loveliest.
Yeah. And boy, what a career. Still going.
Boy, what a career.
Man, what a like,
yeah,
series of movies that is just keeps coming.
It reminds me a little of the way we introduced Stacey, which is, you know, he's one of those folks who, if you took Prison Break out of his resume, it's still an extraordinary resume.
I mean,
like, his work is just, and he's just so wonderful to work on. But so, we want to have a lot of time to talk to Billy. So should we just jump in and index?
Let's do the index.
Locate everybody in time.
Yes. So this is episode 215.
215.
The Message. The Message first aired on January 29th, 2006, and was directed by Bobby Roth, which is sort of surprising because Bobby also directed episode 213. So he just kind of rolled right into prep, I would imagine. Didn't leave Dallas.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So he went, yeah, right from mid-season finale into prep.
Yeah.
Unusual. Zach Estrin and Karen Usher co-wrote this episode, which maintained the trend of growing our audience to 9.9 million live viewers tuned in this week. A new high for the season. We were against the usual suspects in the 8 p.m. and 8 p.m. slot.
So recapping briefly,
here's the recap.
In Montana. I'm sorry?
Nope. I was just... Yes, recap. I said
sorry.
Recap.
I jumped you.
You didn't.
We're recapping. In Montana, Michael Lincoln Kellerman abduct a TV cameraman. They use him to tape and then broadcast a message about their innocence and the company and Oscar Shales. There's also a coded message to Sarah, Dr. Sarah, and Mahone goes to Bellick for help trying to decode it. Bellick has had a very bad time of things in Fox River where he is incarcerated, but he agrees to help Mahone in exchange for a transfer to ADSEG, solitary, to keep him safe from the dudes who are trying to do him dirty.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Haywire.
Yay.
God, I have missed me some Silas Weir Mitchell. Haywire is finishing his whimsical raft that will take him to Holland across
whimsical
the...
Whimsical is a nice way of putting it.
Across the Great Lakes, which do not, in fact, connect to Holland, but that's fine. He makes a friend, and then he realizes that she's being abused by her father, and then he kills the father, which makes him just a little bit less whimsical. And then in Mexico, we pick up with Sucre, who is stranded in a small town on his way to reunite with Mary Cruz and Ixtapa, but a kindly widower takes him in.
Mm.
They reenact some of the introduction to Les Mis beautifully. And then Kellerman gets a call from someone who sounds a whole lot like President Caroline Reynolds.
Mm-hmm. In It Looked Like a Sure Thing, Can't Go Wrong news on January 20th, Senator Hillary Clinton of New York launched her bid for the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination. Seemed like a pretty safe bet until a little-known freshman senator from Illinois named Barack Obama got into the race, made some noise. Also in New Voices Who Changed the Game news on January 28th, Taika Waititi premiered his feature film directorial debut at Sundance, Shark vs. Eagle. Taika would go on to become a celebrated filmmaker, actor, writer of shows and films like What We Do in the Shadows, film Jojo Rabbit, which was nominated for several Oscars and made Taika, who is Maori, one of the most influential Pacific Islander voices in modern storytelling.
And I have to say, what it meant to all of us in Hawaii that we're like, there is a Pacific Islander right now doing this work was massive. In further entertainment industry changing news, on January 16th, Netflix expanded its service from DVD by mail to include streaming media. No one had ever done this before. It was a total innovation in content delivery that changed everything.
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 And can we just say that everyone was like, what are they doing? They have this amazing business model where they send you DVDs in the mail. These people are fucking crazy. They're ruining it.
Why would they mess it up?
Why would they mess it up?
And by the way, this was just streaming. This wasn't original content. Their first original show was House of Cards.
Many years later,
because I was doing press for the first season of Walking Dead, and everyone was like, Netflix is trying to do original. Oh my God, this is so sad. Yeah, we were all wrong. And finally, to wrap it up with sports I don't watch news. This week in January 2006, Tiger Woods won his seventh consecutive PGA Tour event, longest winning streak since 1945. And over on the tennis side, Serena Williams beat Maria Sharapova in the Australian Open to claim her eighth Grand Slam victory.
Setting her up for what is
Yeah, like the most decorated tennis career in history, right?
Yeah, and most decorated probably individual sports person of history. And also, don't forget that when she won her, I think it was her last major, it was also the Australian Open, and she was pregnant.
I knew none of that.
Yeah, she won the Australian Open like
she's extraordinary.
5 or 6 years ago, pregnant. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back.
Just in case you felt like you'd achieved anything today,
That's right. You haven't. That's right.
You haven't. Okay.
We'll be right back.
So, we're going to have Billy on shortly.
Yes, we're back.
Let's fly through a couple of little things first.
Yeah.
Remind me before we intro Billy, I have to tell you a story about Billy and Walking Dead.
Okay.
But you mentioned Leo Marx.
Yeah, so the cameraman
prisoner
was one of those full circle kind of acting moments. I had met Leo doing a play workshop in Ojai at the Ojai Playwrights Conference. We were in the same workshop for 10 days or so and then did a stage reading of this new play. We all stay up there in the dorms. And it was the same play in which I met the woman who would become my wife. And the mother of my child. And the first time, I think, like one of the first times I hung out with her outside of the play and when we got back to LA was with Leo. We would all get together.
Was it a love triangle? You were like, am I going to date Leo?
It was not.
Or am I going to date this woman?
It was not. Leo was partnered up, I believe. And he's a wonderful actor and a wonderful guy.
And so he did great in the show.
Yeah,
he did great. Also in this episode was Kaley Cuoco.
Yeah.
Which is kind of wild because this must have been right before Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up, as a matter of fact. Keep talking.
Was fantastic. I mean, I mentioned on the rewatch, it's a very tiny and silly story, but we were in the same ballroom at San Diego Comic-Con, I think the first season of Walking Dead. We were just all, you know, our casts waiting to do different panels. And she came up to me and, their show had been on for a while. They were massive because I think she got it right after this because I remember her telling me that part of the reason the show got so big, Big Bang Theory, was because they reran it during the strike, which was season 3.
Big Bang Theory was September, came out, so I don't know when they started shooting it, but it came out September 2007. So that's exactly right, during the strike. So,
yeah, so 2006, she was shooting with us.
Yep.
Then they aired the show They aired Big Bang Theory. It did okay. Not amazing. But then CBS had nothing else to put on.
Mm.
CBS?
Yeah.
Whatever network it was. Had nothing else to put on during the strike, so they re-aired the entire show. And in the course of the strike, it became like number one.
Wow.
And it was a really interesting... Anyway, she came up to me at San Diego Comic-Con, and she was like, hey, just wanted to say congratulations on, you know, we were there for Walking Dead and the success of the show, blah, blah, blah. I've been cheering you on since we met on Prison Break.
Oh, that's nice.
And I was like, we met on Prison Break? You were on what? Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, no, no. We just met in the trailer.
Oh.
We were never in any scenes together. And I don't think I'd seen them. I don't think I'd seen the episodes. Like, as we were watching this, I was like, no, nah, this is not ringing much of a bell in terms of having watched it. And it was this really odd moment of this, like, huge... Anyway, she couldn't have been sweeter, couldn't have been kinder. And I felt like such a jerk. And I was like, I need to run into her again to be like, hey, I genuinely didn't... Mm. Anyway, not that any of that matters.
It does matter.
This is just a love letter to Kaylee Cuoco because I think she's a fantastic actress. And she was so lovely in this episode. And I'm glad that she then went on to like become a superstar because she deserves it.
Yes.
That's what I have to say.
It's nice when good things happen to good people.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Because
we've had a few times on the show that we've looked up somebody who's amazing. And it's like, oh, their career... didn't go where I feel like their career deserved to go.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like you watch someone's work, you're like, oh my God, they're so good.
Mm.
And you're like, ah, you never had that huge blow up moment.
Mm.
Kaylee Cuoco blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you told me something about a pen pal in Vietnam.
I realize I got it wrong.
In the rewatch.
We were just talking about pen. It says pen pals, but Mahone says, I want to know Sarah Tancredi, everybody she's ever talked to, everybody she's ever had pen pal. You said pen pal. I remember, I think I had a pen pal. And I remember that my sister told me, because I wasn't born yet, who's 7 years older than I am, that she remembers in the early 70s writing POWMIA letters. That's what it was. There were campaigns to write to congressmen and to write to the State Department about bringing home Vietnam POW and finding out where all the MIAs were.
Sure. Yep.
So I kind of got it wrong. But I kind of got it right. It had to do with letter writing.
You're allowed to make mistakes, Paul. We're all human.
Okay. If you say so.
We're all human, even you.
What is your, before we take a quick break and then introduce Bill, what is your Bill Walking Dead story? This is William Fichtner we're talking about when we say Bill.
So, and I'm going to have to make sure this is very anonymous, but we were in the first season of Prison Break.
Mm-hmm.
Early episodes. And Frank Darabont, who wrote and directed it, the pilot directed, who's, I think, one of the best filmmakers alive,
mm-hmm.
He was a huge Prison Break fan. And he and his best friend, Stephen King, used to watch Prison Break and call each other and talk about it on the phone.
Really?
And that's a big part of how I ended up on the show. It's a big part of how Rob Knepper ended up on Frank's next show, which was called Mob City. And I don't know if that's the final title. But one day there was a role that was coming up in the show and Frank was like, I really want William Fichtner to play this role. Do you think he'd do it? And I was like, I don't know. I can ask. And he goes, you can ask? And I was like, yeah, I can just call him. Just like, you know. He goes, would you do that? And I was like, I don't know. You're Frank Darabont. You gave me a great role. Like, yeah, of course I would do it. I adore you. So on the way home from work, I call Billy. And I wish we'd had a chance to talk about this in the interview, but I don't want to put him on the spot. And the reception was going in and out.
Oh, no.
Because we were in the middle of nowhere in Georgia.
Yeah.
And he was like, you want me to play a zombie? And I was like, no, not play a zombie, on a zombie show. And he was like, why? You're on a zombie show? And it was this like kind of ridiculous comedy of errors. And I was like, listen, just read it. I think it's going to be good. And he's like, I love you, but you're nuts. And he's like, zombies just aren't my whatever. And I was like, okay, well, I'll leave it between you and the agent. And the week or so later, I was like, sorry, Frank, I don't think I got anywhere. He's like, yeah, I heard from his reps. You know, this isn't his thing. And I think he had something else going on.
That's funny.
And then when I saw him on, when we got back together, because he played my dad on The Company You Keep just a couple of years ago. And I was like, hey, so about that, you want to be on the Walking Dead thing? He's like, don't start with me. And I was like, okay. So we were almost 3 for 3 yeah. together, me and Billy.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we will get to our wonderful guest, William Fichtner.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.
All right, we're back.
We're back. We're going to introduce him before he's on.
Yes.
And we're going to do that because Bill's not the kind of guy who wants to hear you talk about how great he is. I think that's the buffalo in
him. I think that's right.
I don't mean like the bit, like a buffalo.
I mean the town.
I was from Buffalo, New York, which is a very like working class, humble place where you don't like to hear how great you are. So you want to introduce our friend Billy here?
Bill joined Prison Break in season 2 as FBI agent Alexander Mahone. Don't say Mahomes. But also, we were all blown away when he joined the cast because we knew him from features such as Quiz Show, Contact, Armageddon, Perfect Storm, Black Hawk Down, Crash, Heat. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
On and on and on.
Cold Brook, which he wrote, directed, and starred in. And on the TV side, a long career. He played a character named Kellerman, which I didn't know, on a show called MDs, 79 episodes of As the World Turns, Entourage, 85 episodes of Mom, which he was amazing on, and recently The Company You Keep, where he played Sarah's dad, as she just mentioned. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Here's our interview
with the
one and only William Fichtner.
Hey, it is so good to see you.
Thank you.
I'm like, I am realizing that I missed you. We had a lot of fun the last time we got to work together.
Yeah, and, we sure did, huh?
That's, yeah, man. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Thank you so much.
When was that? When was that show? How long ago? 5 years?
Two years ago this spring.
Yeah, we wrapped right before the strike.
Yeah.
Right before the strike.
Yeah, for so many reasons, we should still be doing it, but we're not. but there are no accidents, so it is what it is.
No, and you know what's funny? I posted I sent out the word on the Instagram to say if any fans had questions for you. And we'll get to that in a bit. But one of them was like, P.S. Milos is my favorite character in television history. And I was like, I will pass that on. So, Paul, we played a family of con artists.
And right.
The fun of the show was like just getting to do all these different characters. And one of our first episodes, Bill got to play a temperamental photographer named Milos.
Oh, fantastic. I want to see Milos.
It was so much fun. It was like, there was nothing like bad scenery chewy about it, but I spent the whole scene being like, Bill is having more fun than I have ever seen.
I mean,
Bill.
The Connors. And
you were just like a scarf and the glasses and the hair and the whole kind of thing. It was great.
I love it.
Well, let me redirect us for a sec. Just when we say, hey, Billy, we're doing a show about Prison Break. We're rewatching this thing. And some of the episodes we've never seen before. Like, what pops into your head? What floats through your gut? What, like, when someone says Prison Break, where do you go?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. Well, first of all, let me say that when Prison Break came up for me, mm-hmm. I always remember my agent calling me at the time and going, hey, this is a true story. It was a Monday. And my agent called me and said, listen, I'm going to send you the first two episodes of this show called Prison Break. And I'm like, wait a minute, wasn't that last year? didn't they break out already?
And they got out.
and she's like, yes, they did break out, but now
you need to find them.
You need to, exactly. And this is what she said. She goes, so it's a Monday. She goes, listen, I want you to take the time, read these two episodes. Now, mind you, I moved into the house that I'm living in right now, mm-hmm. and where I'm talking to you from, on the Saturday before that Monday. So the whole house is boxed.
Oh my God.
And she said, I want you to take your time, but you need to get back to me by tomorrow because you'd have to travel on Wednesday to do wardrobe on Thursday because you shoot on Friday. And she hung up. Oh, and then before she hung up, she goes, oh, by the way, it's in Dallas. I'm like, wow, I'm back. Hello.
So That's such an agent-y story.
Yeah. I know. I told Kimmy, and Kimmy's like, yeah, right. And I read the two episodes, and I went back up to her, and she goes, did you read them? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, well, what do you think? And I'm like, I think I might be on a flight on Thursday or Wednesday. And she goes, I get it. So that was it. And then I ended up being there, and we did shoot on that Friday.
Wow.
But, you know, when I think about it, Prison Break was an odd thing. It's very odd to come into something that already has its rhythm, that's already like rolling. Yeah. And I think what helped the whole experience or made it exciting for me was that the character of Mahomes was so just completely in a world of his own, stepping into this world, which is not only for the character, but for the actor. And I found all of that kind of appealing, not to mention the first episode, he's, you know, sitting, staring at a bird bath when the sun comes up, taking pills. I'm like, all right, I'm interested.
Yeah, there's meat on this bone.
There's something going on here. And, yeah. But I'm not one to watch a lot of things that I do. So I never really saw a lot of the show, but the experience was, you know, I think you say, what do you think about? I think about Dallas. I think about mm-hmm. Dallas. For 2 years. Mm-hmm. Sure, I think about characters and storyline. This was a big commitment to go, you know, especially, as I said, just moving into this house. And thank God.
22 episodes? You had a little kid?
Yeah, the Burbank Airport had three nonstops a day from Dallas-Fort Worth Airport to Burbank.
And
I think that first season, I think we shot the first season over like 36 weeks, and I commuted home 30.
Wow.
30 weekends. Yeah.
That makes sense.
And the only ones that I didn't were a couple of weekends when Kimmy came to Dallas, or I went to see Sam, who was, you know, younger, up in New York City. So, I mean, there's so many things I think about, but it was a powerful experience.
And also, I mean, look, something else that we've talked about is like, it was also complicated. It was wonderful. It was such a gift. It was so well received, but it was complicated. There were parts of it that were really hard. And I think about, you were in a pretty unique situation, almost, you know, almost with no one else kind of going through what you were going through.
No one else.
That you were married. You had a kid. Well, Dom had kids, you know, and I think they were still married at this point, but, you know, we could kind of move our families or whatever, you know, like Josh came with me and Paul was getting married during season two and flying back and forth. But like, you know, Paul and I both now really know what it's like to be like, I'm earning a living. I'm doing the job I love. But this kid who's my whole heart is half a country away. That's real. I remember never seeing you season two. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was like, because, you know, except we had like a scene or two together, but it was like, whoosh, you were gone because you had this whole other life. And you were surrounded by a bunch of people who were just
hanging out.
Who were young, who'd just gotten super famous. And like,
hanging out.
That's real.
It sure was. There's still a couple of people in Dallas that I keep in touch with from that time.
Hmm.
A couple of people that worked on the show, and Bobby and Props is still a crazy friend. And
Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby and a few other people, and some people that lived in the building that I lived in when I was there.
Where I was going to ask, where did you live? Do you remember?
I lived in a place called the Ashton.
Uh-huh.
Which was a very nice building, a couple of blocks from the American Airlines Center. So I had that.
Yep.
But it was really a place that was great if you were single and like 31.
Yeah.
It just would have been your scene. But it was my scene for a couple of years, which was cool. I wanted a place that, you know, I never had a car there. And I was a walk to the downtown YMCA. Wow. So I had my pool, and
you're a swimmer.
And, you know, it was a quick cab ride out to the airport. So I mean, it fit all the bills, and it was a brand new place that was really nice.
So you took the job with no information other than the first two scripts.
I never saw the first season. So I you know, it was just how it was explained to me, and what the show was about. And
they didn't give you anything on where he's going as a character, or did you have a chance to like connect with Paul Scherring or Matt Olmsted or anything?
I do recall, not so much with Paul, but with Matt. I remember having conversations with Matt. I had a lot of conversations when I got there with Matt.
Did they tell you the Shales? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I remember Matt stayed the first day that I went for like hair and makeup and everything. And Matt stood by because he wanted me to cut my hair so much.
And I know you and your hair, Billy.
I you know, listen, it's like, don't touch my hair. You can do anything. Just don't leave my hair alone.
Yeah. Micro cuts.
Micro minis. But yeah, I mean, it was so much. But then again, in a way, I mean, as we all know, you know, because I was there solo, I had one thing to think about, and that was like doing this job. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to the Y and I swam and went to a couple of local restaurants, Trulux and Cold Vines. And then I just spent my time, you know, looking at this, and I had so much to do on the show that it was, it really filled me up.
It did.
It was a pretty satisfying experience.
Did they give you the Shales? They must have given you the full backstory on that, obviously. You must have known. what was under your birdbath and all that when you started shooting it.
Little bits and pieces in that. Yes. But, you know, then again, you know, give me enough information to put me on a road, but, you know, you don't have to give me a million facts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we went, you know. But, you know, and also, too, you know, as you guys know, Prison Break was the sort of show that every time you open up the next episode that was written, which if you were starting a new episode on a Thursday, you usually got the next script on that Wednesday.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you had to dive into it right away.
Yep.
And, you know, major characters, you know, died every like fourth week.
Yep.
So it's like.
Usually because you killed them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a very misunderstood guy, Sarah.
You've been saying that for 20 years, baby.
Listen, I just, one true story about reading Prison Break scripts. It was season 3, my second season. And we were in some warehouse location and it was like we were on episode 10 and I was reading episode 11 and I had a break on set and I got a hard copy of the script and I'm reading it and I get to the final page and it's like shots ring out, Mahone goes down. I'm like, nobody told me this.
Yeah,
I called up Kimmy. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. And she's like, what? And I hear all this background noise. And I'm like, where are you? And she goes, I'm over at the Grove. I'm like, get out of the mall.
But you weren't dead.
Stop spending money. I don't have a job anymore.
You weren't dead.
No, I wasn't dead. I was shot. And shockingly, by the end of episode 11, I was walking normally.
Yeah.
I mean...
We just watched the episode where you come back to the FBI agent and in the previous episode, you're leaving the hospital and they're like, sir, you can't leave. And you're like, fuck off. And then you walk into the FBI office and they're like, how you doing, boss? And you're like, I'm feeling much better.
Fine.
Like, yeah, that's good. That's great.
There you go.
That's healing on Prison Break.
Yeah.
But did you, as you're reading the episodes, as you're walking through the character and stuff, was there a point where you ever called Matt or had a conversation about like, hey, I kind of would love to see this. I'd like to kind of go in this direction. Or did you just sort of put yourself completely in the hands of the writers and go, I'm along for the ride? Like, did you want to kind of co-create Mahone at all?
No. I don't believe, you know, I might have, but I, it's usually not my way anyway. I'm curious, yeah. You know, it's your show. Tell me what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I would talk to Matt and I love talking to Matt and ask him for clarification on something or fill in a little backstory for me. But I never really, I always found it fairly fascinating what they were coming up with and what he shared with me. And I always just looked forward to it, but you know, I'd be curious what Matt thought about that, but I honestly don't recall that I was like, well, I think it should kind of go like this. Never really had that.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Pro.
Well, I mean, you inhabit him so fully. You know what I mean? Like, he just felt like you, which is interesting because getting to know you, I was like, not at all like you. I think sometimes when somebody lands so fully in a character, you know, you sort of wonder like, oh, did they kind of co-create this? And I think it's, you know, sort of a testament to the work you're doing that.
Well, thank you.
Apart from saying nobody cut my fucking hair, which this I know is a
it's a very Mahone thing to be, you know.
You and Carl Bailey in the hair chair.
Oh.
Negotiating over micro cuts during season 4. I loved Carl so much. He was our head of hair department. I brought him on a colony years later. But the two of you, it was my favorite way to start the day because it was like a sitcom between a barber and a guy who was like, you can cut this much from right here and then you take your scissors and you walk away from me. You walk away from me.
I would drive him nuts. I would go in there and I'd say, listen, we got to trim a little bit, but no more than 3/16.
Wow.
I walk and not all over, like from right here, but don't touch the bottom. And I want to leave the top. Like you guys would. Oh, it was so lovely. It was so he looked forward to fighting with you about your hair more than anything else in his day. He would go outside and have a cigarette afterwards and just be like, that's it. My day is complete. It was wonderful.
I like how those little
go ahead.
I like how those little things become like kind of comforting traditions of like, well, we're going to fight about we're going to get into it about this.
Also, every day. Nobody else cut their hair every day. But Billy was like, no, I woke up and it's 3/16 of an inch too long right above my right ear.
Hey, whatever you need to feel ready for the day. You know what I mean? Like, whatever is going to give you permission.
It was a cold morning and I walked in and I walked by Carl and he was sitting in the chair and I went, I'm cold. And as I walked by him, I heard him under his breath go, hearted.
What?
Cold hearted.
I said, I walked into the trailer and I said, I'm cold. And I heard Carl go, hearted.
No.
I'm like, you know, I heard that, Carl.
Yep. Yep.
I love him. I love him.
Oh, there's no one better. No one better in the business. He was marvelous. And you, speaking of people that you love dearly, you got the wonderful Kim Coates to come on our show.
I did.
For a few scenes.
I did.
That was fun to watch.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch that. I didn't know you guys were buddies, and then rewatching that scene, Sarah was saying that you knew each other. And that scene is
super close.
He does a mini version of what you had to do on the show, which is it's always hard to come into a show. Like you said, it's up and running. It has its own rhythms. It's even harder to come into a show when you have to also be a person of authority on camera because you feel like you have so little authority when they're series regulars and producers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like then to come out there and have that energy, you did it so beautifully. And then Kim did it above you in a way. Like that establishment of his power was really palpable too and very impressive, I thought.
Well, I remember when Matt was telling me about this, I think his character's name was Sullins.
I don't remember.
I think it
was. Possibly right. Yeah.
I think it was Sullins. And Matt was telling me about this character. And when I got the script, Matt gave me something a little bit ahead of time about Sullins. And I remember whatever he shared with me and I read, I literally called him up and I said, Matt, listen, do yourself a favor. Don't go through the casting process. Just hire Kim Coates.
Wow.
I'm telling you. And Matt said to me, do you think he'll do it? And I said, oh, I'll make him do it. I already told him, you're going to Dallas. I even said to Matt, listen, I make him a respectable deal, but I'll save you money. I got a 2-bedroom place. He's not going to stay in the hotel. He's going to hang out with me anyway.
You're just coming to have your friend in Dallas for a couple
exactly.
weeks.
Exactly. And that's what happened. Coachy moved in with me. And I'm so glad it worked out. He ended up doing it. That was great. It was great.
And this was before SOA then, right? It was before he was on Sons?
Right before. Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember seeing him on our show, and I wasn't familiar with his work. And then he was in my living room every week because my husband was such a huge fan of Sons of Anarchy. And then I saw him in your movie, which I want to talk about at some point. You can talk about it now if you want, but you know, you wrote, directed, produced, and starred in a feature film called, I believe, Colebrook.
Colebrook. And
Kim did it with you too.
After I met Coates working on Black Hawk Down, we were in Morocco together for 5 months, and you're either going to never talk to that person again or be best friends with them.
Best friends.
So I often say I met my best friend when I was 44 years old. And I was such a fan of his that after Black Hawk Down, a couple of years later, I went to another friend of mine, Kane DeVore, and I said, listen, I got an idea for a story. And I wasn't driven by the idea. It was driven by the fact that I wanted to do something with Coates.
With Kim.
Which is why
love that.
Kane and I worked on it and wrote it together so I could do it with him.
That's amazing. And yeah. When was the point where you decided to direct it?
That was always going to be the thing I wanted to, okay. Which is also really interesting because, you know, when you wear so many hats, I wore a lot more hats than you mentioned. I mean, in every way, you know, it's a small indie filmmaking.
Everything, you know, craft service.
I was everything. I really didn't have the time to watch every take. I didn't. I would just, right. As long as the framing was right, I was in the scene.
Yeah.
I knew what other actors were doing. You know, I just wanted to make sure it was in focus. I mean, every once in a while I would say to Kim, you know, how was that? How was I in that? And I remember one time he looked at me and he was like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, you know, I'm out of here. That was the last time I asked his opinion.
Yeah, seriously. Give yourself another one.
Did you wrote it together?
I wrote it with another friend of mine.
Oh, a different
Kane
friend.
DeVore.
Oh, with Kane DeVore. Okay.
Coates helped me produce the film.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to shoot it in my hometown of Buffalo. And
Right.
Which is like right down the road from where my husband grew up too, which I think is very
right
sweet.
Down the road.
You both, your accents change when you talk to each other. You get a little bit more, Western New York. Let me back up a second because you've done some really long runs on some shows. Obviously your feature career is insane. And you mentioned that you tend to just sort of receive what it is the writers, you know, kind of want to lay down.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're on a long run, have you ever been in a situation where they're taking you in a direction that you're like, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't, like, what's that part of it like? Because, you know, when you're on something for 20, 40, 60, 80 episodes, I got to imagine there are some scripts that you pick up and you're like, whew, this was not in my bingo card.
I did have an experience once on a show. And it's going to go nameless. It went one season, and it was not what was shared with me of how it was going to go. And I was right up front with that after a few episodes in its first season. It was a big network show. And I was right up front about, hold on a second. Where are you going with this right now? Because you told me this, and now you're going in this direction, and it's your show. But I also want to remind you of the deep conversations we had about this. Mm-hmm. It did not end up being a pleasant thing. And you know what? I remember saying to my agent at the time that the producers of this show and the creators of this show are very lucky because I'm not a phone in guy and I'll always put my best foot forward.
Uh-huh.
And that was a tough one because I wanted to go. And the end of the story is that I remember the day that I was driving in a car with Kimmy and I got the phone call, and the phone call was going to be this show got picked up or not. And I got the phone call. And the phone call was like, they're not picking up the show. I almost blew her eardrums out with the scream of joy. I was never so happy to be employed in my life. I was like, yes. Oh, there's a God.
And for all you civilians out there, actors don't usually like having work stop. So yeah, it just goes to show you that you need it out of it.
That was not a rare moment in my life. Maybe the only one that I ever felt like that. So, you know, I've been fortunate enough that I haven't had that experience much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but a lot of times too. I mean, listen, there's so many great reasons to do a series, and one of them is creatively. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of reasons that it's great to be on a show that works, that runs. There's a lot of benefits that come with that. And you embrace that, you know, you don't, you know, listen, we all need to make money, but it's, you know, it's much more than that. And when it all comes together and it works, it's a wonderful experience. And when it doesn't, you know, not crying about it, but it's, you know, if your heart's not there because it's, you know, whatever makes that so, then it isn't worth it. And that was one example of just really one time in my life that I can honestly remember where I was okay to not have it continue.
Let's be honest. This was the company you keep. And you're like, if I have one more episode with Callie's, I am going to shoot myself.
Listen.
I didn't want to say it.
Sorry,
every time I'd read a show, and it wasn't that show, but every time I'd listen, that we know this, and you and I talked about this, Sarah, but that, you know, the company you keep really focused on a lot of different things, and really what it needed to focus on was one family. And that was the heart of the show.
So much fun. I don't think I've ever had as much fun doing, I mean, on a comedy maybe, but like, it was such a like fake nails and accent, all that. It was just actor candy, the whole thing.
That whole setup with the bar and us and the family dynamics, you know, and some of the more memorable scenes that we had to do that season are things that I had to do with you and your daughter. And that was, special. And it's lovely when it happens.
Language was
that,
so...
I got to tell you, that was, I'm not surprised often in this business, but I was surprised when that show did not go a second season.
Interesting.
I was.
Yeah, the strike didn't help. I'm surprised all the time in this business. When I was talking to Milo and he was like, yeah, they cast our dad. Or no, you were cast first. So Milo calls me and he goes, hey, we've been looking to cast my sister for the last 2 months. You know, would you come? What do you think? And I was like, it took you 2 months to pick up the phone and call me? I was like, well,
actors.
You're saying something different actors. Than what I'm hearing. And and so we went through the process and ended up doing it. And I was like, who else is in this thing? He goes, well, Billy's playing our dad. And I was like, Billy Fichtner? He goes, yeah. And I was like, I thought we were the same age. And it was a funny moment for me. I think when you and I talked, I remember I got to LA to shoot the pilot. We had a phone call. We had a conversation on the phone. I had no earthly, I mean, like, because we're all kind of, I'm sure it didn't feel this way to you, but to me on Prison Break, I was like, we're kind of all peers. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're all showing up doing the same job. There was a moment in season 4 where I had a crush on you. Calm down. We're fine. We're breathing. It's okay. And then I was like, he's old enough to be my what? And I did the math and it,
on TV.
Oh, I got it.
On TV.
And the math worked out.
No, in life, too. The math did work out. And what was funny is I think every single day of the first 4 episodes, I came to work and pointed that out. I'd be like, good morning, Billy. You're old enough to be my dad. Good morning, Billy. You're old enough to be. It was just, it was so fun for me.
If he was
it was
a child,
absolutely wonderful.
A child bride.
Yeah.
I just made some bad decisions in college. That's all. Or some great decisions that resulted in... A wonderful
exactly.
bit. Okay, so we've covered the writing bit. Question, so you've had a lot of directors, and a lot of them have been some phenomenal directors.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a favorite way that directors work with you? Do you like to be left alone? Do you like to, you know, I mean, obviously it's different in television and theater and film and stuff, but...
You know, it's funny. It's in you know, in this more... In the last, like, you know, 5 to 10 years when things have really, like, is independent film has kind of, you know, disappeared a little bit. It's replaced by limited series or, you know, all of the new outlets where series come. So, you know, I find that a lot of this newer stuff that, you know, and knock on wood, some things that I've been working on recently, it's kind of somewhere between like what a series used to feel like and what it feels like to work on a film. And I'm never one. Listen, if a director has something inspiring to tell me, oh man, bring it on. And you know what? I'll listen to somebody tell me something, even in working in television or film. And as soon as somebody gives me an inspiring thought, I usually say, great, can we just roll? Because, you know, we don't have to explain. We don't have to give it a name or a whole paragraph. let's just get inspired and then roll the camera. Let's shoot that. Mm-hmm. But if a director never says anything to me, I'm fine. I'm always going to show up with, you know,
something good.
I remember one of my first films, I played a blind scientist and,
Contact.
I remember what's that?
Contact.
Yeah. Contact. And I remember that someone said to me right before we started rolling, someone in production said, the day before we were filming, started filming, someone said, hey, oh, listen, tomorrow we have, this couple's coming in, Millicent and Gary, and, she's blind, he's sighted, they're married, they're here to work with you on this. And I remember thinking, did you really, you know, to myself, because this was my first film, I didn't speak up. I was like, I just kept thinking, did you really think I was going to show up tomorrow and not have a thought about this for the last 2 months? So I love it when directors let you fly. As soon as it gets a little too much, I had a circumstance like that in the last couple of years in a small indie film and a first time director. And man, I'll tell you, I got on set and this guy was just, he was such a kind guy. And he was like, no, if you stand here, if you just turn, if you just say this, and if you just did this. And I finally, literally less than 20 minutes on set, looked at him and just politely said, I didn't realize this was paint by numbers.
Yeah.
Well and, said.
And that was the end of that. Now I'll give you a great example. I remember, and I'll never forget one of the kindest people I've ever worked with was Ridley Scott on Black Hawk Down. And Ridley would just, he'd look at you and he'd tell you a little bit about what he was doing that and just let you go. And letting you go to me is where all wonderful things happen inside of myself.
Bill, I had a very small part in a Michael Mann movie in Collateral. And you obviously have a great big juicy part in Heat. And I watched Michael with certain people letting them go. And with other people not letting them go. I mean, like, to the point where you're like, oh boy, this is not, can you walk across the room like a man this time? We're going to do that again. Like that shit over and over and over and over and over. And you're just like, I hope he doesn't turn that shit on me. Edelstein, that's great. Fine. And you're like, okay, good. But how did you find Michael in particular in that? Like, did he let you go?
Well, I will tell you this. The first 2 days of principal photography on Heat were the scenes with Van Zandt, this character that I played.
Yeah.
Now, Heat was like the third film that I ever did. And the second film that I ever did, I remember I was still living in New York and I took my buddy Max. We went to Broadway in 67th. To go watch the movie in the movie theater. And I remember going to Max, hey, this part's coming up. And then it went right by it and the scene wasn't there.
Oh,
and I'm like,
Oh no.
Maybe they put it later on. Anyway, 90% of what I did in the film was cut out of it.
Yeah. Oh.
And the next film that I did was Heat. And I remember Joe Rice sent it to me, my agent at the time. And Joe said, listen, it's only 5 scenes in the film. And I read the script and I called him back and I said, but it's 5 scenes you can't cut out of the movie.
That's right.
And I became very, very
aware. That's a smart read.
Scenario. And I've used the expression a lot since then. You know, I've read scripts since then and I've called my agent or manager back and I said, I can tell you right now, that part is inconsequential to the story. So I will pass because it probably won't make the story.
Right.
But with Michael, the first 2 days of photography were the Van Zandt scenes. Now, I'm not quite sure on the timing of what time of the day, but I know it was, you know, we started shooting on a Monday and it was a morning call. All I know is that it was late. That first night. And I remember that I was kind of nervous, and I walked over to Michael, and Michael was super, super kind to me.
Yeah.
And I said, Mr. Mann, and he said, call me Michael. And I said, Mr. Mann, is there something else that you want me to try? And he goes, no, why? And I said, because, well, it's just that we're on take 26. And he's like, no, I got it in the first couple. Let's go again. So I don't know, whatever he was looking for.
Yeah.
But he was very, very, very cool with me. And you know, only a couple of times since then have I run into him, and, you know, he just, you know, I saw him 10 years ago and he was like, hey Bill, how you doing?
Yeah.
Kind.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I love it.
Paul, should we take just a couple seconds and fly through a couple of
fan
questions?
Yeah, let's do a couple of fan questions.
Billy, we'll, let you go.
And then Bill will let you go.
Sure.
Also, I could do this all day.
Same. Okay, so our fans, we say who our guests are going to be. And then we get some questions. And when we said you were going to be the guest, we got a lot of questions. So we did a little curating. I hear's a good one that you're not going to want to answer. At Planet Sarah 2024 asks, if someone made a movie about your life, what actor would you want to play you? You don't have to say me or Sarah.
The only person that would ever make a movie about my life is one of my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Who would I want to play me? I can play me.
No. It's
that's
50
the most.
Years from
that's
now.
The most actor answer I've ever heard. I can do it. I could. I have that.
I can do that. I can do that.
I have the range.
like Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie. I can be shorter.
I can be taller.
I can be.
We want somebody else.
Who would I want to play me? Oh God! I mean, listen. I think Ryan Gosling's one of the best actors.
He'd do you
going
good
right now.
Ooh.
I agree.
I mean, he's just amazing.
Here's another good one. At Sperkling, Sperkling, asks, if you were not an actor, if you had not been an actor, what profession would you choose to do?
I don't know. Well, you know, I have my bachelor's in criminal justice.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I was, I honestly think I wanted to go to college, and I visited a college in Long Island, a place called SUNY Farmingdale.
Sure.
And I was so blown away by, oh my God, you can live in this dorm. This is really cool. I had to pick a major, and I think my father suggested, you know, criminal justice. And I'm like, yeah, criminal justice. Sure. I'm sure I was somewhere through my freshman year sitting in the dorm, getting high, realizing I'm not going to do this, but I was having such a good time. I'm like, let's just let this roll. So I'm not sure if that would have been the path. Oh God, I don't know.
I could see you as a judge. I could see you as a like young man, get out of my courtroom. Like,
oh yeah.
I'm a judge's assistant right now to my wife. So, I mean, I work in the court system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We really have to let you go.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to throw one.
Well, we got five. We got a few more questions.
Well, let's try this one. Cause I'm curious. And this is from Anamta Hussein. I probably pronounced that wrong. Sorry, bro. And I'm going to say, feel free to make this a Prison Break or not Prison Break related question. Hardest scene you found yourself doing? Is there something
hardest
that
scene
stands out? And I, while you're thinking, I am going to tell the fans that you developed a reputation, at least by season four, of being the hardest actor to light on a set.
Yeah,
you would
why?
Always wedge yourself against a wall in between. Because Mahone was going through a lot. And I remember season four, you would like wedge yourself against a wall between like a shelf and a filing cabinet. I remember Fernando Arguelles once being like, how am I supposed to light it? Do you know what I mean? And just the director, he was like, he does this every time.
I know the scene he's talking about.
Really?
I where, yeah, I know. Where Dominic finds me and I'm like hiding in a closet between a file cabinet and a wall. And I'm like, this is an awesome place to be. So that probably came from that. But, you know, the emotional aspect of scenes are, you know, sometimes you just, you want to retain all of thoughts and whatever's running around inside of you. And, you know, as we know, you know, it's a lot of concentration, but that's a wonderful thing. The only things that I popped to mind first that were difficult, were some physical things. You know, that's can be, you know, shooting Perfect Storm, the storm sequence is at stage 16 at Warner Brothers, when, you know, we're in this replica of the Andrea Gallant, a 90-by-90-foot tank, 26 feet deep. They put on the water cannons, the fans. You're just getting smacked around. And I mean, really getting bounced around. And that was challenging, you know,
yeah.
Some of the Black Hawk Down stuff and the conditions over in Morocco were really hard, but, you know, hey, there's not a day that I work on something and I'm not sitting in a chair on set that I'm not very grateful and yeah, happy. It's a place that I love to be.
Same.
So,
you know, you always look at all of that and go, wow, okay, cool.
It shows.
I hope that answers that.
It does.
You make the sets you're on better places. We got to let you go.
Let's let him go.
Thank you.
Billy, thank you so much.
Thank you. Such a joy.
I had a great time talking to you both.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
He's wonderful.
Sarah.
So thank you to everybody for listening.
Yes, thank you.
Everyone.
Yes.
As always, we invite you to check out the Watch Party episodes, where you can watch us talk about the show while you listen to the show. That's available on the link wherever you're listening now, joining our Patreon community, or on the link in the Instagram bio at Prison Break Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Oh.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Prison Break.
You know what?
What?
Yeah. No, I think we're about to say the same thing. You want to try and say it together? 3, 2, 1.
Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is a Caliber Studio production. It never works. Your hosts have been inmates, Sarah Wayne Callis and Paul Edelstein.
Our prison warden is producer Ben Haber.
The front man of our jailhouse rock band is Paul Edelstein, who made all of our music.
And our prison yard tattoo artist, logo, and brand designer is John Nunziato and Little Big Brands. Check him out at www.littlebigbrands.com.
And I believe, we can cut this out if it's not true, our editor for this episode is my dear friend and surrogate little brother, Luke Lucian Singer. Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production. Thank you for listening.